welcome to the Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, a couple of years ago, I decided I was going to read the Bible all the way through. And I did it, but it just about drove me crazy. All of us have got friends who had to walk the entire distance of the Appalachian Trail, have to climb the highest mountain in every state. Y'all have been listening on NPR, maybe to the guy who read the encyclopedia all the way through. What is it about us that gets us to do these crazy things? Well, maybe one of the craziest things was that a young woman decided she was going to cook every one of Julia Child's recipes from the Mastering the Art of French Cooking. And wouldn't you like to know the inside of how that worked out? Well, you can, because the best-selling book is now out in paperback. Julie and Julia by Julie Powell is just out in paperback, and Julie Powell's in Chapel Hill to talk about her book. Welcome, Julie Powell.
Thanks for having me.
All right, if you were me, is that right? If you were I, do I say that?
Anyway. You were me.
I think me.
You
me.
Were in my position.
There you go.
Who in Chapel Hill would you get to help talk to Julie? Who knows more about food? Well, there are a lot of candidates, but we always turn to Bill Smith and the chef at Crook's Corner and the author of a great book himself of recipes. Julie Powell, though, you didn't write a book of recipes, did you?
No. Please don't pick up my book looking for recipes or looking to learn how to cook. That's not what I'm about, unfortunately.
Tell us the story. I mean, it's just, tell us some of the story.
Okay. Short story is that I continue to be living in New York City, in Queens, actually, and I was getting ready to turn 30, and I was working at a absolutely soul sucking secretarial job downtown Lower Manhattan, and I was having I had a panic attack, sort of an existential panic attack, and decided in the midst of this that the best thing that I could possibly do to turn my life around and make everything great would be to cook my way through all 524 recipes in this 40-year-old cookbook, and then everything would turn out okay. This was not something that came out of a deep, rational conversation or
how did you know about Julia Child's at all? You were too young to really have been caught up in the fervor.
I knew about the book from way, way, way back. My mother, the copy I had, the copy that I cooked through, which is now, you know, in two pieces.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah, it's a total mess.
I think it needs to go in the Smithsonian with the rest of the exhibit.
Well, thank you. It was my mother's copy, and she had had it in the pantry of her kitchen forever, and she almost never used it. She'd pull it down on New Year's to make the foignon or something, but basically it was just stuck up there. And I wouldn't have eaten anything out of it if she had, because I was the pickiest child you can imagine.
You grew up in Texas, and you were a meat eater.
I was a big old carnivore. I would eat. My brother and I, they used to tease us about the Foster hamburger. My brother would eat the cheese and the bread, and I'd eat the meat. So, yeah, I mean, we're completely ridiculously picky children. And I love books. And so I kind of fell in love with the book just as an object. Like, I like to take it down and look at it and look at all the strange French words and these drawings of incomprehensible acts. And it seemed so adult and kind of dangerous and mysterious. And so it was a book that had just been in my consciousness for a long time. And I grew up, and I began to be someone who did like to eat and did like to cook, and so it just sort of popped up. It felt like
I don't want to interrupt the story much, but I think it's interesting about how we come up, and I don't want to keep on calling this a crazy thing that you did, because it's just a wonderfully crazy thing, but can you, looking back, come tell us a little bit more about how the idea dropped into your head and then how it solidified?
Oh, well, you know, it was a real, it's one of those eureka moments that's kind of hard to, it was like I was spinning and spinning and spinning and seeing, you know how when all the problems in your life kind of bunch up into this horrible, and you feel like you can't pull one string, and you can't, if you could just loosen one thing up, everything would come clear, but it just didn't, and I couldn't make it happen, and, you know, every problem seemed to exacerbate every other problem. You know, I didn't have a job, and I didn't have any money, and I, you know, hated New York, And somehow, and it was like it kind of drifted to the top of my head late one night. And it was not, what had happened was I had the book. I had been looking at the book, and I would, it's sort of like bedtime reading. I wasn't.
So your mom had given it up.
Yeah, I stole it. it was like.
Well, was it like a religious experience?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, very much so, in fact. I felt drawn to this book in a way that I couldn't have explained. And I think when I started the project, if you had asked me on day one of the project, I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And you said, why? I would say, I'm going to learn to cook. And this is a really great way to learn to cook, because the book is set up as an excellent
cooking school.
So, yeah, it's a wonderful book that way. But there was something else going on. I mean, it was more like I was being drawn to this book, that there was something that gave me when I would read the book at bed, and it would comfort me. It was like my heart would slip. My heart would be beating, and I would be all. I used to get every day at work, I would flush bright red at 3 o'clock every afternoon, and my heart would start racing. And I would go home, and I would read these recipes.
I guess I really love this, and I get we're going to get to the cooking in a minute, but the experience that many of us share of. Are reading about great adventures, reading about climbing Mount Everest, mm-hmm. reading about climbing all these mountains or hiking the Appalachian mm-hmm. Trail, that are reading about building a boat. You know, we almost never do these things, but we enjoy reading about it. But sometimes it just unreasonably gets, I could do that. Yeah. I should do that.
Yeah, I think... Exactly. It's like there's nothing rational about it. I didn't sit down and go, what should I do to make my life better? You know, I mean, this was what I came up with. No, it was this little something was pulling on my heart, you know, and it's, I think, I give it all due credit to Julia and her writing as well as her recipes. There's something that comes off the pages. It's like a smell. It's this ineffable feeling of comfort and sort of hope that was coming off of these pages. I didn't get it. I didn't understand it, but I needed it, you know?
Bill Smith's with us, and yeah. Bill, gosh, I shouldn't suggest anything about this, but your cooking tradition's a little bit different from Julia Child's, but there's some overlap. And you read Julie Powell's book, Julie and Julia, and loved it. How does Julia Child's and Julie Powell's experience intersect with yours?
Well, the chefs of my generation, Julia Child's was sort of an icon because I started in the early 70s and she was on television then and just churning out books. And we loved it. You know, we couldn't wait for the next thing or to try what she had said to do. And actually, your book was given to me by one of my old staff members.
Oh,
yeah. she sent it over and said, you've got to read this. You're going to have a fit. And my original copy is now going across northern Spain on a bicycle with one of my old dessert cooks.
Oh,
so.
Gosh.
So no, I loved this book. It really, everything you said, man, oh yeah, right on. You know, yeah.
Bill, did you ever use Julia Child?
All the time, every day. I mean, that's why I love this book so much. Was because it just reminded me of what fun we had in the kitchen at La Residence in 1975, 6, 7 back then.
Right.
I was working in a French restaurant, and we referred to it constantly.
Wow.
Yeah, constantly. That's why I rang a bell with all my old staff. That's why we were all reading this.
Now, that's interesting. You know, when I did my first book tour, I was in Cambridge, mm-hmm. which of course is big Julia Child country, and they did this wonderful little event with this at this restaurant where they cooked all Julia Child stuff for this dinner, and then I spoke. But what the chef there said, and he's younger, he's like in his, I don't know. He came up later than that, and he was saying that no one in the restaurant, it was like completely had to kind of change the whole way the restaurant was run because the techniques were so different than what they're used to doing.
Oh, really?
And,
well,
and I thought that was I thought that was strange. I thought because they do. I mean, it's not French. It's a different style of food. Obviously, they're doing a sort of more modern, updated thing.
Yeah.
But the way of making sauces and
techniques are sort of ironclad. I think.
I thought so.
Yeah. I mean, I use them still. I'm in a Southern restaurant now, and I still make brown sauce the same way I learned from Julia.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, another of my favorite chefs, maybe not on the sort of deep spiritual level, but that I like to cook from is Paul Prudhomme.
Uh-huh.
And, you go back there, and, you know, there's a lot of sort of similar basic stuff going on there.
Well, we're talking to Julie Powell, who's the author of Julie and Julia. As subtitled, 9 Year of Cooking Dangerously. Bill Smith is with us, and I'll be right back after this short break. fact, who's talking? This is D.G. Martin. Bill Smith, the chef at Crook's Corner, and I are having a great time with Julie Powell, who is the author of the best-selling book, Julie and Julia, My Year of Cooking Dangerously. And Julie, you told us about how you got started on this project. Once you got started, what happened?
Well, one thing that happened that was
I should say, for anybody who joined us late, her project was cooking every one of the more than 500 recipes in Julia Child's Mastering the Art of French Cooking, Volume 1. And that, you know, anybody who's cooked from that knows that's a marathon.
Yes, it was. And I of course, part of it was from the beginning that I was just going to do it in 1 year because, you know, doing it in 2 years would just not be crazy enough. So, and my husband, and this wound up being very key to the whole project, though I didn't realize it at the time, suggested that I blog about it. Now, this was in August of 2002.
Just getting going with blogs.
I had no idea what he was talking about when he suggested it, and I was sort of irritated with him for suggesting. Like, what? What are you talking about? But writing was something that I'd been interested in doing for a long time, and so it did seem like it made sense. I would get the cooking stuff done, and I would write about it, and that would sort of be.
Now, there are people here who are listening to us who don't know what a blog
sure.
is. To this day, I'm only newly informed. Tell us what a blog is.
Well, it's basically just what my husband said at the time is that it's a website for people who don't know anything about anything. I mean, it's an online diary, and you don't have to have a degree in computer anything.
You kept your diary essentially in public for anybody who
exactly.
wanted to.
It's a public computer diary, which I didn't really understand the ramifications of that when I started. I was sort of thinking of it as okay, I'll write it and I'll put it out there, and my friends can read it, and my family can read it. And I didn't really consider what was happening. I started writing at this very, I don't know if you call it a low bar or a high bar of intimacy in terms of, you know, exactly what I was doing, all the mistakes I was making, you know, all the, you know, foul things I was thinking about whoever, and I just putting it out there, not really.
So you were uncensoring yourself,
yeah,
not censoring
completely.
Yourself.
Completely. Well, I was writing it every morning.
I will just say that you, as you're in your book and in your blog, what did your husband say? Yeah, Texas foul mouth, so there's a lot of
like a
spice in there.
Absolutely, it was partly the way that I was the routine I got into is I was cooking. Often very late into the night because these recipes get pretty complex pretty fast. And at first I was trying to write afterwards, but usually I'd had several gimlets and it was really late and I had to go to work. So I would go to sleep and I would wake up and get up first thing in the morning before I'd take a shower or anything. I would get in front of the computer and write. And so my sensor hadn't really kicked in. And so I just write the first, you know, thing that came to my mind at 6:30 in the morning and put it out there.
Maybe you can sort of tell the story of the early days of the project and the early days of the blog and kind of what happened.
Yeah, well, you know, I just started, you know, it was one of those things. There was no forethought going on at all.
Next day.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I should do this. Okay, let's go. And I started going. There was no planning. And I start cooking and I start writing about it. And, you know, and within a very short amount of time, you were talking about a matter of a couple of weeks, I all of a sudden realize, oh gosh, like there are people out there who I don't know who are reading this and are commenting on this, and that's one of the aspects of a blog is that you'll have an entry and at the bottom people can write, you know, make responses to what you're doing and what you're, you know, and there becomes this sort of discussion that you're having with your readers, and I gained a group a readership very quickly. And
Why do you think that was? Why do you think that? Now, you're looking back, how did it happen?
There's a couple aspects to this. On the one hand, there's this essential viral nature of the internet and computers, and people were for linking to me,
people Googled Julia Childs and got to you, or your friends sent copies?
I think my friends sent links, and I was also on the blog I had was hosted by Salon.com, which is, you know, a fairly well-trafficked site. And as I said, this is early days in terms of blogs. So now, I mean, how many millions of blogs? I mean, they produce a million new blogs every day. You know, it's just. But back then, there weren't that many. And so it was possible to go onto Salon and go, oh, here's something new. What's this? And so that kind of got the wheel turning, and it just kind of spun out of control. But I think that, but the other side of that question is what, you know, why did people stay, which is the more important question. And it's interesting. I think some people, I say that some people came for the personal quest and stayed for the Julia Child. Some people came for the Julia Child and stayed for the personal quest. I mean, there were people that were drawn to it because they knew Julia and they were from that generation. And then there were other people who were 30 and miserable in a job. And those two things sort of melded for people. I mean, ultimately, I think that what I hope, I think the people, the readers who were most devoted, and I had some crazy people.
Don't say that. Some of them were probably here.
Oh, no, I say crazy with all due respect, being one of them myself. The people who were most devoted to the project loved it because they got involved with the odyssey of it and with the fact that I was in some way that no one could really put their finger on trying to change my life by doing this crazy thing.
Well, we want to get back to the what was involved in the odyssey, but I can't resist asking you this question. And it is Bill and I think would agree that this is just such a fun book to read, and it's not just because of the quest or just because of the information, but because you write with vigor and excitement and all of that, and insight into how the 30-something, or the at that point the 20-something,
29-something, that 29, that's a bad year.
How you all are talking and living and what you're worried about, all of this, and your descriptive powers of this, it's not traditional, but amazingly effective. So here, all of this is about way of getting to the question of when did you realize that part of the reason that people were sticking with you was because of that vibrant white writing style, or did you ever come to terms with that?
Yeah. I think actually, again, pretty early on, at the very beginning. I mean, there was some personal detail from the beginning, but the blog entries were pretty straight ahead. Okay, today I made potato leek soup, and this worked, and this didn't, and I did this, and this. And I went on for a couple of weeks, and someone said, wrote in, you know, great, I'm glad you did a good job with, you know, whatever beef stew, but I want that other. I want more of that other stuff, and so I said, oh, you know, okay, and I kind of went back, and it became more. And the other thing was that I'm not much of a food writer. Actually, I don't think I use food. I'm a big eater, and so I like to write about food because I like food. But for me, food becomes more of a conduit to get to other things. And I actually, frankly, became bored of describing the food every day. I was like, okay, how many times can I talk about, you know, how luscious this steak is? And so I would say, yeah, okay, so the steak was really good, but you'll never believe what happened to you.
What happened to
you? You know, and that became, and people, you can tell from the comments what people would comment on. They were reacting to what my life was. And gradually, I mean, it took me a while. I remember about halfway through it, I was feeling kind of stuck. And I said to Eric, I feel like my writing's kind of losing its snap. And he says, you should go back and read it again. And I did. I realized, without even knowing it, I had developed this voice and an instinct for what, you know, what I, how to follow the avenues I wanted to write about in a way that was interesting to people.
Well, was it
his tone?
Was this looking back at it now? Was this your voice, or was this the voice? Kind of like the Wizard of Oz, you know, you're back there protected by this, that you develop a personality that your audience is looking for. Was there some of that in it?
It's a tricky line, you know, because on the one hand, the blog and the book are so intimate. And I mean, people know things about me. You know, I'd meet people that I hadn't talked to in 5 years, and they wouldn't have anything to ask me because they knew everything I'd been doing. And so there's obviously there's a lot of me out there. But yeah, you know, it is a character. I mean, I've developed, it's this way to, in a way, I feel like I didn't protect myself at all. I put everything out there in terms of details of, you know, everything from, you know, everything, you know. But on the other hand,
I know things about you I don't know about my wife or myself.
But on the other hand, yeah, I mean, you protect yourself by making it art. You know, you craft it, and that necessarily puts a little distance. I remember particularly when I was writing the book, more consciously I began to think of Julie Powell as a character, you know. And it was interesting when I get if you go to my Amazon.com, some people just hate my book, and and they'll write things, and they'll object to my political views or my, you know, the language I use. And I was like, and especially the political views thing, and I was like, this person in this book, this is the way she acts. She, it's not that I'm, if I were writing a book claiming to, you know, have the answers to, you know, the current political, and was saying stuff like that, then yes, you would have a right to say that this is, you know, this makes it a bad book. But she's a character. She's a character who likes to
say likes to bash Republicans. Well, that'll be well accepted here.
Yeah, you'll be fine here. Yeah.
Well, and let me, this is so great, not only about the cooking, but about the description of what an author faces. And Bill, you had to face some of these questions as you started out with the recipe book, and you came up with a, I don't want to say a memoir, but it is it's a book that informs us about you. And
I guess
cooking.
It does, yeah. I don't know how that happened to me. It just it was me running my mouth, is what I like to say. I just had more to say than the recipes, I guess. I wanted people to enjoy reading it too, so sure. I think that helped. That was
well.
Sort of
people read you guys as we read Julia Childs or read the adventure stories. We read you all not because we're gonna, in your case, we're not gonna do every recipe, and in your case we're not gonna go on a journey like you did, but we sure enjoy hearing y'all.
People love to read cookbooks, even if they don't cook.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's remarkable, actually.
I think that I was just talking to someone the other day who had come to a reading I was doing yesterday, and Somewhere in Nashville.
And, I sympathize with you.
Yeah, it's Thursday. Yeah. It must be. Yeah. And she was saying how when she reads a cookbook, she cooks a lot, but the voice of this person that's writing the cookbook really gets in her head. And, I mean, Julia Child's cookbook is a huge example of that. Mm-hmm. Even though the book is pretty formal, I mean, it's not written like, I don't know, Nigella Lawson or someone who is very chatty, but it's a formal book, and yet that voice kind of, it just imbues you. By the end of the year, she's like, in my head. and I think that there's something so, in your book, there's so much more to a recipe than the food and the instructions. There's a whole history
where it came from.
Behind it, and a personal history, and a regional
sure,
history.
Yeah.
And a whole set of memories, and that a really good cook writer can, at least, even if you're not writing about it directly, can bring up some hint of that. I mean, it's something I love about, I think Julia is underestimated as a writer. Everyone knows what she did for the culinary landscape and her recipes, but her writing is lovely and evocative to me. I really think it's back to what we were saying before. Ultimately, by the end of the year of the project, I feel like what I was getting out of the book wasn't just techniques. I was feeling, internalizing something of the way she lived and the joy that she brought to this book.
There is always this. I mean, I apologize for going off on little tangents, but
tangents are.
We all have our favorite books. You know, for so many people around down here, it's the Bible. Mm-hmm. You know, and we get a favorite book. There was a book of favorite books that books that are meaningful, and many people will have a book that they carry around in their pocket, and they often read much more into the book than the author ever imagined. It becomes, mm-hmm. It becomes a spirit of a guru to them that speaks, because I guess they have a conversation with themselves through the.
I completely agree. I think that Julia, the book, through the book, became such a character in my head. I feel, you know, I mean, I'm so familiar with the book that you could almost, it was, what I was having was a conversation with myself, but I had cast part of me as her, you know? So I've sort of put part of me into her and come to conclusions about all kinds of aspects of my life. And
what would Julia do?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Oh, exactly. You know, and, you know, it's not just writers. It was like the famous, what would Willie do? What would Willie, you know, Willie Nelson's another one of those characters that people kind of like, yeah. You know, yeah. put their whole selves into them and can kind of have this. But I agree. I totally agree. It's an interesting thing that we that we can do is project ourselves into these books and bring so much out of them.
Well, I've lost track of time, and we got to take a break. I'm talking to Julie Powell about her book, Julie and Julia, and Bill Smith, chef at Crook's Corner and author of his own book of recipes and memoir, A Season in the South, is helping me. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Bill Smith, chef at Crook's Corner, and I are visiting with Julie Powell, who's stopping by to promote the paperback edition of her best-selling book, Julie and Julia, My Year of Cooking Dangerously. This is a book that records Julie Powell's odyssey of cooking every one of Julia Child's recipes from the first volume of her Mastering the Art of French Cooking. And those of us of my generation know what that's all about. But, Julie, maybe I've just asked you to talk too much about the process of writing and philosophy and all of that. Tell us how to make potato and leek soup.
It's very, very simple. And it's, in fact,
Julia Child style, I guess.
Yes. You peel the potatoes, chop them up, boil them in some water with some leeks that you've made sure they're clean, don't have any grit in them. You mush, once they're good and soft, you mush them all up with something, a fork or a food mill or a ricer, and not a Cuisinart. And mush them all up, and you stir in some butter and or cream. I tend to do both. And salt and pepper, and put a little parsley on top if you're feeling fancy, and that's it. Boom. Potato leek soup. It's great. Delicious.
I love how you were open to everything. You could sort of see it as you went along. You were getting marrow out of things and eating all these guts, and you didn't used to like liver, and now you do. And
right.
I loved that.
Eggs. I wouldn't eat eggs before. I think that was definitely when I went into it. One of the things that I was excited about, challenged by. I mean, I was, like I mentioned before, I'm a really picky kid, and I'd kind of gotten over it. I'd gotten a lot better about that, but there were still these sort of black marks that I couldn't get past. And I knew, when I started, it's like, the brains are down there.
Yeah.
I'm going to get there, and by God, I'm going to do it.
Right.
And I loved that about it. And that's a minor way that my life has changed, is that there's now almost nothing in the world that I won't put in my mouth at least once. And
that's the way I am. It's sort of the blessing of a lively mind. I mean, you just don't eat it again if you didn't like it, but try it once.
Like, what's it going to do?
Spit it out, if you don't like it.
It's a fun way that when I was growing up, there was this constant refrain from my mother, would you just try it? Would you just try it? And now we've come completely, I've lapped her. And I'm like, Mom, Indian food is good. Would you just take a bite, all right? I love being a person who will eat. I've become so impatient when people want to lunch, as we know.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Well, Bill, the part of Julie's book, one of the parts that just grabbed me was this description of how to make potato soup, because I love it.
Uh-huh.
And yet, you start thinking vichyssoise.
Right.
The simplicity with which she described Julia's recipe was a winning recipe for me that gave me the courage to go try it.
Mm-hmm.
And your book has got a lot of, you give a lot of encouragement of this is, you can do this.
I'm all about simple at this point, too. I've been doing this for so long, So I've tried to.
If you go to Crook's Corner and ask for, if you've got potato soup, or do you ever have it on the menu?
Sometimes,
is it a seasonal kind of thing, or potato
More than likely, if it always potatoes, it'll be something I'll do when I don't have something else, because it's fast, like she said.
Yeah.
But no, I love potato soup. Mm.
And it's popular. Now, when you got into the other recipes, the ones that you described in your book, they got to be, what is the right word for it? In some respects, troublesome in the sense that sometimes you would find that while the recipe directions might have been clear, they didn't. You misunderstood them and came out with the wrong thing, or that there were other pieces of it that sometimes presented trouble. Not all of them were as simple as potato soup.
No, well, that's an understatement. Yeah, I had all kinds of disasters with, and mostly I found, almost always, the problem was with me. It was with me not paying enough attention, or me trying to do too many things at once, and or me just not having the, like, there was, there's this one recipe that's for a rotisserie chicken in the oven, and they talk about the spit attachment in their oven. I'm like, what? I couldn't even conceive. Like, I mean, I guess I could sort of conceive what that might be, but I had never heard of such a thing. And so I contrived this thing with straightened out a metal clothes hanger and kind of twisted around the top of a pot and stuck the chicken through it and tried and kind of cooked it with the oven, like, perched open and kind of tried to turn it. Every once in a while, it was a disaster. there were all kinds of things like that. It was almost never. And then I remember there was one. And this was just me being in too much of a hurry and thinking I understood what she was writing about. And I was trying to make icing. I was going to be on this television show, and I was going to bring this cake. And this was like a week before the project was finished. So I'm racing to get done.
You should know everything by now.
Yeah, well, right, and that was always very frustrating when something failed. It's like, what am I doing? I can't make a crepe. Like, what's wrong with me? And but at this point, I was trying to make three different icings to put on the same cake. And I did it, put it away. Second one done, put it away. And I keep trying to do the second one, and it keeps like separating out. Three times I do it, and I dump it. I have to dump it out, start over. And I'm sitting there, what is wrong with, this recipe just doesn't work. And I look at the recipe, and I now can't, of course, remember the exact details of it. But I had just misread the instruction at the beginning. The egg yolks were supposed to go over here. And I was trying to butter them all together instead of separating them. And it took me, it was like one of those, just like my brain just froze.
Your description of this was one of the most beautiful parts of the book, because it, my failures were always the night before Christmas trying to assemble, pursuant to really clear directions for any normal person.
Right.
But for me, I just, there wasn't, it didn't work, and everything, I just stayed up, and instead of being a happy Christmas spirit, I'm cussing and doing all this stuff. But which is to say that Julia Child's directions are warm and clear and everything, but nevertheless, you have to follow them, and you have to, there's room to misunderstand.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, with anything, it's just so complex. I mean, if you're looking at a recipe that's 5 pages long, and she also, the way she writes the recipes, a little, I think it's kind of neat, but it's different than the way recipes are usually presented. Instead of having like all the ingredients at the top and then they go through the description, she goes stage by stage. So in stage one, you need a bowl, two eggs, and some flour. In stage two, you need, a chicken and wine. And stage three, so you have to. You have to think ahead. You have to. That was one thing that happened a lot. As I get to step number 19, I forgot the.
And everything falls down.
Yeah. Oops.
Well, Bill, let me before we got to take a break. But, Bill, when you're experimenting and using Julia Child's, and when you go through one of these recipes, having cooked for many many years, not Julie's, her first year. Do you follow the recipes exactly, or can you make on-the-spot adjustments and just kind of use it as a guideline?
Both. It depends on what it is. For desserts, you have to do what they say. For soup, you don't have to do what they say.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Let's take a quick break. Bill Smith and I are talking to Julie Powell, author of a wonderful book about her odyssey, cooking every one of Julia Child's recipes in her volume one of Mastering the Art of French Cooking. We'll be right back. Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Bill Smith, a chef at Kurt's Corner, and I are visiting happily with Julie Powell about the paperback, the recent issue of the paperback edition of her best-selling book, Julie and Julia, all about Julia Child's and cooking every one of her recipes in a year. Your odyssey, Julie Powell. There are lots to talk about. Part of your book, I was surprised to find, is an honest memoir of your life during that year, in which you describe in intimate detail not only what you're doing bad and good and your innermost thoughts, but also the your husband, whom you clearly love very much, but who, when he got under your skin, you were willing to write about it.
Right.
Your friends and their activities, both positive and negative, your parents, your people at your office. So, you know, in North Carolina, Thomas Wolfe is our legendary author who wrote You Can't Go Home Again. And so the question is, I know you go home again, but what are the consequences of not only putting your life out there, but putting the lives of your friends?
Yeah, how much trouble did I get into?
Yeah, how much? You should be doing the interview. That's the question I should ask.
Obviously, it's a difficult thing when you're using your life as your work and your friends' lives as your work, more to the point. I mean, I don't really care what I write about myself, but about other folks, it is something you have to worry about, and it's something that I, as a first-time writer, are still wrangling with. But you would be surprised, actually. I didn't get nearly as much...
Everybody's still speaking to you.
Every single person is still speaking. Well, no, the people in my office aren't speaking to me, but I...
All right, well, tell us this. Why?
You didn't like them, I remember.
Tell us, so you were pretty honest and forthright about them, although I thought generously. So what kind of office were you working in?
I was working in a government agency downtown that was involved in rebuilding the World Trade Center. So we were right there in the middle of... I was actually working with the Memorial Department and building that, and... that's gone so well so far. But it was, it was a government bureaucracy, and there were a lot of people who were more involved in the politics than in getting something done. A lot of other people who were incredibly idealistic and wonderful. There were some wonderful people in that office. But, yeah, what was the question?
You described them in some cases unfavorably, in some cases very nicely, but you... you made fun of them, I guess.
Yeah.
That's the
yeah.
thing. And
yeah.
so, as you did with some of your other friends, mm-hmm. But the office people are the ones that you have tough time
with. Yeah, well, the office people, I don't have, my friends are my friends, and I may think that they're crazy sometimes, but I love them, the people in my office. And I was a little nervous about, just from a legal standpoint, I mean, not that I said, I mean, I kept it general, and I mean, obviously I wasn't giving away any state secrets or anything, but, I was writing what I felt. I mean, I was writing from the voice. Again, this is one of those things we were talking about before, about Julie Powell in this book as a character. I was a disgruntled secretary. Disgruntled secretaries say mean thing about their bosses. And so that was really, that was really what I was trying to get across, rather than slamming anybody's
character. Getting back to one of the things we talked about before, as you wrote about your mean bosses, mean offices, did you pick up readers who were interested in that, who were in that same situation, who were reading you because you described what they were feeling?
There were a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people, especially the younger people who are drawn to my book, they're like, I work in that office, basically. I mean, that is my life. And, I mean, people really relate to that drudgery and that the office politics and all that kind of stuff that it just grinds everybody down.
One of the exciting things about this story, as I'm conjuring it up, is that this is a book that would not have been written if it weren't for the internet and the blog. I mean, isn't that amazing?
It's incredible. It makes me feel very positive about the world and the internet. I mean, which is not my normal state of feeling, but the internet made this thing happen. I know I would never have finished it if I hadn't had a blog, first of all. I know that my readers were almost like co-writers of the book. They were such a part of that community and helped me understand the relevance of what I was doing. I don't know that I would have gotten that there was any kind of universality to it if they had.
But there's a lesson for other writers, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that this is an emerging, who knows? I think everyone's going to be able to use it differently in a different way. It's a new medium. For me, it was an extraordinarily freeing medium after years of, three quarters of novels. And this just opened me up. It allowed me to figure out what my voice was, and it freed me up from needing to know how it was all going to end.
Well, Bill Smith monopolizes, you get the last question. Or comment.
Comment. I love the crescendo with the canard en croûte sort of toward the end. I want you to know that I got out my Julia Child and followed along with you as I read, watching the pictures that you were describing and all that stuff.
I was hoping someone would do that.
Yep,
like
I did.
No,
it was a very complicated recipe. And
Did you follow it only by reading?
I just read. I had the two books side by side. I did not go make one, though. But I just loved that. It was really fun for me.
Yeah, well, I went out and... in honor of your visit, I bought myself a $2.50 chicken on sale at local grocery store. And when I got to that point, I said, I wonder if I could do the chicken the way it's described here and come out. Mm-hmm. Look, we're not finished. It's such a great book. Julie and Julia, my year of cooking dangerously. Thanks to Julie Powell for taking time to visit us here in Chapel Hill.
Thank you for letting me come.
Oh, we loved it. And thanks to all you for listening. I'll be back same time tomorrow.